yet. She usually responds to her calls about the agenda on Tuesday, but there's rumors that Drum Out the Drummers is going to be coming up on the agenda at the city council meeting on Tuesday, either in the afternoon at 3:30 or at 7 o'clock at their nighttime meeting.
Yeah.
Now, you're a musician on the Mall.
That's what they say.
And you, in fact, were the subject of a rather obnoxiously favorable cover story in the Metro.
Not a cover story.
Well, you had a big picture. Was it Phil Free? Anyway, you got more media than I've ever gotten in this.
I know. That's the way it should be.
Santa Cruz Metro. I mean, you know, who do you think you are, anyway?
Just because they don't like you, Robert. Well, they made you the most irritating personality of the year. I thought that
hey,
was
I don't run around singing about the hospitality Nazis, man.
Well, neither do I. Phil does.
I see. So Phil, in fact, is the loose cannon on board, eh?
No, I think it kind of varies between us. You know, I usually do the night shift, and Phil does the day shift, and, you know, we keep resistance on the Mall all the time, and I think that's the big problem. And now that there's the new corporate owns Starbucks is in town, I think I might be singing across from there.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing how they weather the storm and what they do.
They're at the old beer garden right across from the coffee roasting company.
Yeah, right across from the coffee roaster company. That really makes a lot of sense. How many more fucking corporate coffee places do we need in Santa Cruz? We got enough amped up yuppies already, you know, we don't need any more.
So you're again attacking the very lifeblood of Santa Cruz, the coffee house, and you wonder why Eric Larson doesn't like you.
Why, Eric what?
Well, Eric Larson is simply speaking up for those who understand that people like you, well, I'm not even going to discuss this with you.
I don't understand the whole thing between him and John Malcolm. I don't know what happened there. I can't really say input on that, but I know it's bullshit for him, you know, for people started bad-mouthing him when he started trying to do something within the CPRB. I thought the CPRB was a joke because they should be actually going out with police in cars or even just walking around and doing cop watch type things, you know? I mean, they should have people out there doing that with video cameras and everything. But, of course, the police don't want this in their town. And, of course, Chief Belcher doesn't want this in his town.
And the city council and Scott Kennedy probably don't want it in their town either.
No, because then we're harassing the police, and, you know, it's tough because, you know, this whole beating thing that happened down in Riverside, actually it was right above Whittier where I used to live,
uh-huh.
And the whole thing that happened down there, I had this little interview, which I'll play on Sunday on my show with Officer Amos, and later, I didn't realize my tape recorder was on, but it was on, and
mm-hmm.
We were talking
my
about
goodness.
It.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed him the cover story, and I said, you know, you guys got to keep them sheriffs in line, you know. And they said, you know what, there's a difference between North California cops and Southern California cops. And I'm like, oh, really? There is. And so he started telling me his whole philosophy and how Southern California cops are more and more aggressive and meaner than the ones up here. You know, I don't know why. And then he went around talking and for quite a long time, and Officer Amos finally said, you know, with a halo on his head, he said, you know, I just tried to find my corner of the world and make it better for everyone. He just wrote a guy a panhandling ticket, too.
That a panhandling ticket?
Just after he wrote a guy a panhandling
ticket. This is in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
You know, recently they haven't taken any panhandling tickets into trial. I'm curious to see if that one goes forward.
This is a complaint. It's a guy on the Mall you see around. I'll have to talk to you about it later, but evidently, the guy at the coffee cart outside Logos is the one who made the complaint against him.
Oh, John.
Yeah.
John
so
made the complaint. Wow, that's
he
interesting.
He made a complaint, and, you know, of course, the cop had to take it and wrote him a ticket for it. And
yeah, John has been getting a bit more conservative in his young age.
Yeah.
He admits that, too.
He had problems with us when we first started playing on the Mall, but now, since then, he's been nice because, well, Phil always buys coffee there. Because it's the only uncorporate-owned coffee place anywhere, you
right.
know, on the Mall.
Well, some of these businesses are really amazing. I mean, you know, Pizza My Heart.
Pizza My Ass, yeah.
Pizza My Ass. I went into Pizza My Ass and got a calzone the other day.
Uh-huh.
And this woman who was sitting next door at the, I guess it's Acapulco?
Yeah.
Wanted me to come and join her, so I did. And I'll be damned if the manager of the Acapulco had a veritable shit fit that I had this calzone there, you know. And, I mean, I'd ordered drinks, you know, and she was virtually having a full meal except for this. But, you know, first the waitress came out and read us the riot act, and I said, fine, I'll put it in a box. But the woman I was with was just enraged. She said, no, you won't. You'll eat it here, and so forth and so on, and blah, 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 blah.
Wow.
And then the owner came out, you know, and these two went at it like, God, like, you know, kung fu experts.
I know.
Nasty. It was pretty nasty. I guess I don't want to attract kung fu experts. Anyway, so we have in the studio with us Rolling... He's going to leave. I will not say Rolling Thunder. I refuse to say Rolling Thunder. No way. I have Michael Sheridan here in the studio. You know Michael Sheridan of the River Street Refugees?
Vaguely.
You should. You should.
Okay, sorry.
Michael's going to belly up to the mic and kind of give us the update. Mike at the mic, so to speak.
Okay, well, I'm going to get out of here, and I'll just say one last thing.
Do it.
Is that the reason why these people are so uptight on the mall is because we're taught in this death culture that we have to put money and economics above everything else. And so, of course, humanitarian needs like the River Street Refugees and the camping ban has to be put in place, because that's the way the death culture is, and we got to oppose it and resist it.
Are you going to be coming, Bob, to the city council meeting on Tuesday on the Drum Out the Drummers?
I should be there.
Okay, because I'd like to hear more about that. I maybe we can talk
There's
more
a
on
story
Monday.
And the good times about it if you want to pick it up.
Okay, I'll check that out.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Robert?
And belly up to the mic, big guy. You're too far away.
The chief pacifist on the Civilian Review Board quit, resigned. Doesn't that seem like a coincidence all of a sudden when there's people being harassed on the streets more and more in Santa Cruz, on Hippie Corner, in the Poganip by the Rangers, down by the levee? Cops are arresting people. They're shouting at the kids in the parking lot on Hippie Corner the other night at the top of their lungs, ordering them to leave.
Illegally ordering them to leave. It's a public place.
Yeah, well, now there's one less person on the Civilian Review Board who's willing to make inquiries and really speak his mind. You know, he's not afraid to offend the police. That's very inappropriate for, you know, the homeless in this city here who, you know, need all the help they can get right now. The armory's gone. There are people sleeping around houses, in the bushes, around businesses, in the woods, all subject to criminal penalties as misdemeanors, you know, living in fear. And when it comes to Hippie Corner, you know, I'm living in my van. There are more people living in vehicles in Santa Cruz passing through than there are people living in the woods. When you get down to talking about solutions and, you know, eliminating the camping ban, well, that's one thing, but there are a lot of people don't know how to live in the woods. They live in vehicles. This is a mechanized society. And around Hippie Corner, you have hundreds, thousands of young folks, deadheads, rainbows, who come through Santa Cruz regularly or periodically by the thousands, you know, each year, and they stay a day sometimes, sometimes a week. And when you talk about the homeless in this city, seldom does anybody consider, you know, their needs. You need a car park here, too. All you need is a goddamn parking lot with a shower and a bathroom, you know, and a sink. It doesn't cost a lot of bucks, you know. It doesn't even have to be paved.
There actually may be such a facility already available. The parking lots have bathrooms. I don't know if there's actually a shower facility in the new parking lot behind the Cinema 9, but there is bathroom access there, and those lots could be opened up late at night for use. In fact, that was recommended as early ago as 11 years ago by Councilmember Arnie Levine, who incidentally was not a progressive. He was a conservative. He suggested that, and he was roundly shot down by the progressives, Mayor Marty Wormhout, John Laird, Mike Rodkin. None of them liked that idea, as far as I know. That was back in the mid-80s. Have you ever used, more recently last summer, you were probably around, I don't know if you were aware of this, there's this, you know, park in a church parking lot with less than three vehicles under the auspices of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and you can do it legally as an exception to the camping ban. Are you aware of this one?
I'm aware of it, but again, it's that old, you know, Christian, you know, church thing of salvation that goes along with it, you know, and you have to... No, I would never ask the Christians for a thing.
Right, I don't... I mean, in all fairness, I got to say that you don't have to go in for a sermon, but you do have to... they make their restroom facilities available.
Christians control the poverty industry in America to pick up the leavings, the human debris, the capitalist casualties, the victim's family, you know... when they're most down and out, and they control the poverty industry in Florida. They've got Salvation Army people running halfway houses and running youth halls, you know. When these kids are under the most prosecution, when a guy's just coming out of prison, to be under the intimidation of an indoctrination that's religious, you know, and conversion as part of straightening up your life, and have that so close in when a person is most vulnerable, that's really, you know, an extreme of church and state that's going on in this country today, bigger and bigger. And when you talk about police, you know, giving you a hard time, you know, it's been in the main news for a few days now about some cops beat up some illegal immigrants down in L.A., and they're going to sue them for $10 million. And there was another recent case of a cop who beat a woman, you know, on his own video, but it didn't get as much news press coverage. The cops are really, you know, freaking out in a lot of places around this country. A few weeks ago, a cop up in San Francisco, in the middle of a rock concert, blew his brains out.
You know? I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, they're under such stress to do right, do the right thing, and keep it all under control. And sometimes the contradictions of what they see in their world drives them nuts. So cops are committing suicide on an epidemic level in this country.
Yeah. Well, let me, I actually, right before you came in, Mike, I was about to play a little piece by Dan Hopkins about the River Street Refugees. You may remember that was the group that was sort of evicted from the...
I've come to write a footnote to the history of the River Street Refugees. As of March 15th, the group was scheduled to go up to Lompico and occupy some land that was donated privately, but it never came off, and so the majority of the group dispersed around March 15th. And I heard there's a small number of people, 7 or 8 people, still out at Brighton of the remnants, and what they're up to, I don't know. But the River Street Refugees is no more, and we showed that homeless can live through a California winter together cooperatively in tents and do it for ourselves and with ourselves. But the River Street Refugees never got to the point where they could act as a social and political unit in this city. In any people in the group were just didn't have enough political consciousness to do that. They were still primarily concerned with survival activities and feeding themselves, and had a hard time seeing beyond that and acting beyond that. That was sad. That's left kind of a void here, along with the void created by Barbara Riverwoman with her token, you know, crisis management solution for a voucher system in the state parks, which, you know, is kind of feeble, and it's typical of the lame pacifist Quaker mentality in being conciliatory with city officials and, you know, trying to resolve their needs rather than creating your own agenda and your own program and proposal, which is the long haul, which she didn't want to do. So her and Sherry settled for this little token, and it by no means solves the needs of the people of the homeless of Santa Cruz overall, which is what really is called for and has been as they have failed to do. So Rock can stand in there and say, you've given me no proposal. I said this in November, that the city is going to deny any future campgrounds in this city or this community or this county because of the things that they suffered in the back 40, all the you know, bad stuff that was going on and the failures there. Well, it's come to pass that there is no campground that's really going to work for all of the homeless of Santa Cruz. Just for a few who might have transportation can make it out to a state park and, you know, do a couple weeks, and even that may not go. The rest are hiding around the houses in bushes, sneaking in the woods, and left to their own devices. There's only a maximum 96 people in the shelter programs, the mini shelter, and the church programs left. There were 125 people when the armory closed, approximately, and where have those people gone? A lot of them have hit the road, you know. They've gone south or gone home or gone on to new adventures because it's springtime. But at least 50 to 75 are still hanging around the fringe of the city in the shadows, trying to survive for various reasons. And they are being ignored. I said that this city would decrease, shrink its homeless program and systems in March 15th, and that's what's happened. And along with that, I said that there would be police repression, and they would allow the police to begin sweeping the streets more, and that has what's happened. You know, I don't know what the solution is at this point, but I'm the historian, you know, so I had to keep the truth straight of what's gone on. And
well, we have another historian who's entered the studio here, Bittersweet Bird, as I call him. You want to pull up a chair and join this, kind of make a three-way? Just Michael, do you know Bird? Bird, do you know Michael?
No, I don't.
Michael was a River Street refugee for a time, a long time, until they disbanded. Bert has been a homeless activist for at least a decade, if not longer.
Hello. The thing is like I'm coming to the conclusion where there's the Citizens Committee for the Homeless may take the transitional housing after a year and turn it over to mental health like they did the River Street shelter.
Really?
Oh, yes. History is definitely going to repeat itself. Something isn't done.
So,
because what had happened is, like, nobody's going to tell me that a new program with a new director is only going to get a one-year contract. And that's what Daniel Darling has gotten.
Daryl Darling, yeah.
Daryl Darling, I mean, he's gotten a one-year contract for around $85,000 a year to run the transitional housing. And that was the same thing that happened at the River Street shelter when it was given up to mental health.
Let's review a little bit of this. So, Bert, you're talking about the Community House Project, which is the project that is being built on the bones of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which did serve 200 to 300 when there were lots of people there at the very end last fall. Community House now serves 20 to 40. Actually, it doesn't serve anybody. It hasn't been funded yet, and there's only one administrative trailer. I guess there's another little one and a half trailers sitting on that lot. It's a locked-off field. It's been graded, and they need hundreds of thousands of dollars to run the thing, and it's going to cost $617 per person, obviously not for the more lowly income of those without homes or houses. The other project you talk about, which was initially run by Fred Gray, and I guess under CCH directly?
This is all the same thing. From Fred Gray to this point, it's all the same thing. It's all under the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and it's all doggone predicated on getting money that they've never gotten, except for one time. They did get money from FEMA, and then they let it lapse, and the money was returned to the government.
So this is Paul Lee's fundraising baby, which he's been doing for the last decade. Citizens Committee for the Homeless had control of what was then a very scaled-down River Street mini-shelter program, which I think had 14 beds, 2 for the homeless and 12 for the mentally ill, until we were able to force them to open the annex, which gave them another 10 or 15, 20 beds in the spring of 1989. That, by the way, was done through civil disobedience, where we simply occupied the building and called the media, and then 2 weeks later, instead of 6 months later, as they'd planned, they opened it up. And Barb Riverwoman was a part of that, though, interestingly enough, she never got tried in court. The rest of us got tried. I think she pleaded out on that whole issue, as did Brian Koepke and other activists. But some of us did go to court. Sandra Loringer was found guilty. I got a hung jury, and Jane Immler and Linda Edwards and Malou Pinecrone, 3 other activists in that 1989 summer, were found not guilty of a trespass. That's what they claimed we'd done. We actually were doing so simply to bring to the attention of the public the fact that a shelter was unused and should be used. But Bert, you've been investigating CCH for a decade, and you were discussing this at the last a show or two ago. Any new updates or information for us on what they're up to?
The only thing that I know right now is that I'd like somebody to be able to give me a computer to use for a while so that I could get a hold of all the nonprofit agencies and just question them on how the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has not participated in any grant funding, so they say, and yet their name is all over 5 or 6 major grants, and one of them is the McKinney grant.
Federal Stuart McKinney funding for homeless projects?
Well, no, the McKinney grant was supposed to be for homeless medical expenses, including housing, on an emergency basis. But it's being used in this county for everything but the Community Action Board tried to get some of that, what was left of that money, and they got nothing. And no explanation why they were denied.
So, regarding your computer problem, you should talk to me about this when we're off air, because I think I may have, I don't have one myself, but I may have access to a computer for you. Michael, have you any comments about the Citizens Committee for the Homeless?
So the saga of the CCH goes on, leaving a trail of debris and broken hearts and spirits, minds and bodies in its wake, with all the best intentions in the world. And doesn't it make you wonder, you know, Herr Darrell Darling has lost two sons, he's faced with so many failures, and, you know, the slings and arrows of outrageous misfortune, don't you think he might want to change his way of living? Or maybe he might want to think about the karma attached to what he's doing? I'm sure there are some people who see that. His son, one son committed suicide, now he lost another son in Ron Brown's fiery demise in Dubrovnik yesterday, or day before yesterday. I couldn't help noticing that we're like, I read the list of executives who went down on that plane, and it's pretty amazing, some CEOs from about 7 or 8 different major companies. The capitalists took a serious loss the other day, along with Mr. Brown. And do you know, one of the top dudes that they were touting as a loss to the world was the guy who set up the bridge program for low-income public housing in San Francisco. He was in Croatia trying to sell them, you know, a way of containing and controlling their poor in a post-communist modern state, you know, competitive state. He was transporting public housing projects to Eastern Europe. That's one of the reasons he was there, to promote that. So, well, I guess that might slow the process down for those, you know, concrete bunker type places with the barbed wire and now security guards in Chicago, in Puerto Rico, and in several other locations around the country where the poor in these projects on the pretense of fighting a war on drugs have become like the pacification villages that were created in Vietnam in order to keep the inhabitants safe from wild things and VC. They had to put them behind bars and have heavy-duty guards around them.
And in some cases, they had to destroy the village in order to save it.
Sounds familiar?
They had to destroy the campground in order to save it, yes.
CCH and ISSP. Someone really needs to document how many people have died homeless on the streets of Santa Cruz each year for the last 5 or 6 years that they've been running their programs, and that's a barometer of those people who were neglected in these programs over the last 3 or 4 years, and the most serious cases certainly, but there were others of people who were ignored and neglected by Mr. Darling's programs, and at least one guy, what's his name, is resigned and leaving, going to get married and give it all up.
Paul Marceau, perhaps?
Paul Marceau, yeah.
Pardon the name, Paul, yes, he's headed out of town.
The lieutenant for Mr. CCA.
Obergruppenführer.
Yeah.
any more comments, Bert, from you on this? I don't mean to leave you out.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I would be more than willing to go to the grand jury with what I have right now against the city council, because the city council never ordered their own soil sampling done on that property at 111 Coral Street.
And the back 40.
Yeah. And the thing is with all the industry around it, and all the doggone polluting industry around it, they were supposed to, by state code, have soil sampling done before they even changed the deed over to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Because of their proposed use of the property. They never did it. Rotkin himself admitted they never did it. And now he's backpedaling on that like anybody's business. And now the only thing that you can do now is go to this, try to have an injunction against them. Because what they have done is the city issued a negative declaration. Let them go ahead with the doggone planning phase of it without even addressing the fact that they never ordered the soil sampling to be done.
Well, maybe we can get a call in from Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board of Directors member Becky Johnson, who really is the only board member who seems to have taken an interest in the needs of the homeless as distinguished from the needs of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which is somewhat of a different group.
What do you have to say, Becky?
Call us, Becky. Actually, Becky is probably watching The Young and the Restless.
The Young and the Restless just came on 17 minutes ago.
So I think Becky may probably be occupied with that, but maybe we should call her up and interrupt her Young and the Restless. Try
don't
to
do that, dude. That's
that might be dangerous. Yeah, dangerous, that might be dangerous.
I've been up to Berkeley, and I'd like you to know there's a bunch of homeless been coming through up there. You know, the weather's freer. Kids, young people, old hobos, tramps, gypsies, nomads have been coming out of the east now since it's warmed up. And so there are more street people on the streets in Berkeley.
Are they enforcing the Proposition O now that Seattle has had its anti-homeless laws upheld?
I'm not familiar with that issue. I was just there for a few days, like I'm going to be here for a few days. When you live mobile in a vehicle or something, you tend to move around more.
Now, are you supporting the Sleep Out at City Hall with Dan Hopkins and Sean Alimi and a host of others?
Supporting in spirit, certainly. You know, theirs is a just issue. Well, it's pretty well understood that Eugene and Santa Cruz are in violation of the Constitution in maintaining an illegal camping ban. It's already been tried in Miami, and the thing is, there doesn't seem to be the legal force here to take the case in Eugene or Santa Cruz through the courts and all the time and money and things that it takes to bring Eugene and Santa Cruz into compliance with the Constitution, that people in need in this country should have free use to the forests and the earth that belongs to the citizens of this country. We the people, this is our land, and we should be allowed to use it when we're in need. It's our basic resource. Shouldn't be denied us.
Any word from San Francisco and the so-called cessation of the sleeping arrests?
I just heard a rumor yesterday down here, though. I haven't heard anything in Berkeley, that someone here said that there have been some more arrests, and there was a small campground of people, maybe in Golden Gate, I'm not sure, who were harassed and rousted by the cops. I've heard that Willie Brown on the street is doing as much in arresting and citing people and did it more in 30 days than Jordan did with his Matrix program, while at the same time exuding this, you know, Clintonite rhetoric to the media that he embraces the homeless or he's going to stop citing them and stop arresting them and he might even consider allowing them to camp and so on and so forth, which is all, you know, homeless advocacy, PR to build up the right rhetoric. You know, what's really important to people like Mr. Willie Brown and Clinton and Ron Brown, who perished, and some of the people from San Francisco that were out there, is that they want to develop major business and industry and new stadiums and new BART programs and things like that, in which black contractors, you know, will or black entrepreneurs will have a place. The Clinton administration has been using that for the last several years to galvanize blacks who just came out of an L.A. rebellion, came out of 10 years of crack addiction and shooting on the streets, to offer them these opportunities to be upwardly mobile and create a black entrepreneur, a middle-class black and a wealthy black. Ron Brown, I heard, was being groomed to be the first black man after he leaves government to be offered a CEO of a major Fortune 500 company for the first time. And that for the black opportunist and capitalist, this was a serious blow to that, you know, that endeavor.
Any comments on the Unabomber's alleged capture?
I hope it's not him. I hope they haven't got him. He should remain a mystery man and elusive until he dies. Just like the guy that took the money and jumped out of the D.B. Cooper, jumped out of the plane and disappeared. We need heroes. We need winners. We need victories. You know, we don't need any more martyrs.
You call the Unabomber one of your heroes, Michael Sheridan?
I read his manifesto, and a lot of it made sense to me.
Well, thank you very much, and do join us for the next edition of Bathrobes, Spears, Broadsides. But we're not leaving yet. Yeah, thanks. Bert, you're welcome to stay tuned here, to stay with us. Any comments on what we've been talking about?
Well, the only problem that I see with getting a hold of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless would be that we need somebody to go to the grand jury.
Perhaps Bob LaMonica, if you're listening, you can go to the Grange. Well, I don't know what the answer to that is. I was actually going to kind of briefly change the subject here with a newspaper article, Britain OKs Tough Terror Law. Police may stop frisk at will. This is in today's Chronicle, a little teeny story on a back page, and it reads from London, reprinted from the Washington Post. Parliament gave British police new powers yesterday to stop and frisk people in the streets in the interests of combating terrorism. The government sought the legislation and rushed it through in one day, citing fears of possible Irish Republican Army terrorism over the Easter holiday. The law allows police to stop and frisk and search anyone anywhere they designate without necessarily having grounds for suspicion. A person declining to be searched can be arrested, jailed, or fined. The measure extends to police throughout Britain special powers previously confined to law enforcement authorities in Northern Ireland, where the majority of terrorist acts have occurred during the province's 25 years of sectarian violence. The IRA ended a 17-month ceasefire in February with a bomb attack in London's Docklands development, which severely set back the Northern Ireland peace process. While negotiations continue between the government and Protestant and Catholic political leaders in Northern Ireland for a permanent end to the violence, the government remains on alert for further terrorist acts, particularly this Easter, the 80th anniversary of the 1916 rebellion against British rule in Ireland, known as the Easter Rising. Any comments on this, Bert?
It's the same thing that's happening in this country. I mean, like, you know, Matrix, you know, everything else that's happening.
The anti-terrorism bill, which is nationally being considered.
What it is it's a hysteria of law and order. While actual doggone violent crime is dropping, the hype is going out more than ever, you know? And, like, there's studies that were made that says that a prison guard in the state prison system in California, just walking in the door as a recruit, makes more money than the teacher with 5 years' experience.
Amazing.
So it's just the same thing. It's incredible. They're using law and order to beat people over the head. That's exactly what it is. If you don't like my law and order, you can go to hell. Period.
And they're doing the same thing here in Santa Cruz in terms of people who are protesting for basic human rights, now going into night 37 at the town city hall at 809 Center Street. We have a report from Dan Hopkins on that, but before we get to that, since we are beginning to run out of time again, that always happens to us, I have a report that you've all been waiting for, perhaps, from Wonton Dave Jacobs. You remember Wonton?
Remember Wonton? Yeah.
How would you describe Wonton, Bert?
I like the guy. I think he's got a good heart. Sometimes he gets a little too rambunctious, but, you know, you can't blame the guy.
Wonton is an older man who sported a bathrobe, probably taking it from some other famous bathrobed figures here in Santa Cruz, who actually joined us at the time of the Iraqi War. He showed up at the town clock and began protesting, and in a protest that did not end until 4 months later in May. And in order to get rid of Wonton Dave and, I guess, Robert Flory and meandering Mike Girth and other people who were there, they had to pass a curfew on the Constitution at the town clock. And it's now, if you go to the town clock, you'll see a little sign that says closing hours. I think it's 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. or 1 a.m. to 6 a.m., something like that. There had not been previously closing hours, but in order to get rid of demonstrators at the town clock, they closed it down. Now, of course, years ago, they declared a sunset curfew in all the parks in order to stop those dirty, homeless people from sleeping there after dark. And that, of course, not only prohibits them, but it makes it illegal for anybody to be in the park after dark. I tend to ignore those restrictions, but those are on the books. And if the cops want to hassle you for it, as they do, for example, when there are ongoing demonstrations that last for a while, you'll be facing tickets. Well, we have a report from Dave Jacobs, who I don't really need to describe in any greater detail other than to tell you he's a homeless activist who is on the lam from Santa Cruz. I phoned him at a mysterious, undesignated location, and we have a report with the fugitive.
Okay, well, it's April 4th, and we're on the line to Wonton Dave Jacobs, longtime activist for civil rights. at an unknown location, and we thought we'd get in touch with you, Dave, because we wanted to let you know that we are in day 36 of the sleep out at City Hall here in Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah?
It is so, yes.
Oh, this is the first I've heard of it not being in Santa Cruz right now. What's it about?
Well, the campground, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter Campground, which actually housed an increasing number of people last fall, eventually had 200 to 300 people there. The back 40 was closed down by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless to set up a 40-person, $619 a month, million-dollar trailer project called Community House. And so, in essence, what happened when the Winter Armory Shelter closed this spring is there was very little shelter space for people to be, and the sleeping ban became particularly onerous to poor people and people sleeping outside. And so, under the leadership of one of the former Coral Street Open Air Shelter people, Dan Hopkins, several people began a nightly sleep out in front of City Hall and have been doing so since March 1st.
Wow.
And, of course, we need your expertise, and you have been urged to return to town to deal with your court matters and then to join us, or perhaps to join us and then deal with your court matters.
Well, this is more of an... I was told this is going to be an interview, not a recruitment program.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I couldn't contain myself, but indeed, this is an interview.
Available for recruitment right now.
Well, how are things going with you?
Well, I don't want to get too involved in what's happening to me on a personal level, other than to say that I'm dealing with the problems that I have that caused me to leave Santa Cruz, and I hope to be able to return later this year.
That would be great. Yeah, Robert Fleury is racking up tickets like gumdrops. They've reinstituted the policy of course, arresting people for misdemeanor sleeping and then dropping the charge.
Sure.
And they also have the policy now of seizing blankets on infractions as well as misdemeanors.
Well, they've always had fun with those policies.
Yeah, well, that may well be, but it was currently, it's now becoming more fully effectuated. They're doing so regularly, but it isn't stopping the vigilers. The vigilers are continuing their nightly vigils, so it's good. Mayor Mike Rotkin, he's our new mayor, is insisting that Santa Cruz has the best social services of any city of its size up and down the coast, and spends more money and so forth, and that...
Michael Atkin?
Rotkin.
Oh, Rotkin.
You remember Michael Rotkin.
Yeah, I remember him.
And Scott Kennedy, of course, is backing him up. And
well, it's pretty typical for people that get themselves into their government office to not care about the people that don't have money.
I'm afraid so.
No, and the money that they supposedly get to spend on the people that don't have money, they simply spend on the people who do have money. I mean, look at the back 40. It's was purchased with money that was dedicated towards helping homeless people, and for years and years, it was a crime for homeless people to use that property. It was sitting there empty and foul.
And it is, of course, now a crime again. They've locked it off. They've put up chain-link fences, and they put in some administrative trailers in, preparatory to their bringing in 9 more trailers for their so-called community house project, which is actually kind of a halfway house, very tightly run, almost like a prison program where you get out of prison and you're not allowed to have visitors and you get drug tested and so forth.
Wow, sounds like they might be using it for people that come out of jail or prison.
Yeah, or people, at least certainly people with SSI checks.
They're going to charge rent, huh?
$617 a month.
Wow. Why would somebody pay $617 a month to live in a trailer, much less a controlled environment like that?
You know, that's a good question. My only answer might be to remember the case of this guy who was telling me probation officers impose restrictions, and if you cannot be homeless on probation, apparently. At least he couldn't be. That's what Miguel Balderos told me recently out of jail.
Well, it's pretty much up to your probation officer there.
Really?
Yeah, if the probation officer feels that you are creating a situation for yourself where you're not going to commit crimes again, and you're not going to be a bad influence on the society, then as the probation officer has the ability to approve your living circumstances. You could be living in a $5,000 a month home, rent paid. And if the probation officer feels that the environment is not a good one for you to remain crime-free, then he can revoke your probation for remaining there.
True enough. Well, have you got any, you've been probably watching the national scene with this terrorism bill, national terrorism bill, you've been following that?
Well, a little bit, but I think that, you know, getting back to the trailer, the back 40 and the so-called trailer facility they're going to put in, it sounds to me like they might never even get that thing up and going, and if they ever do, it probably will be people that are required by law one way or another to stay there.
Yeah, yeah, the man who's running the trailer project is Daryl Darling, who last December became notorious with Paul Meursault, the head of the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, for violating their verbal contract with the Coral Street Open Air Shelter residents when they agreed with those residents that they would not make the move essentially until March. They made a specific contract, and then when we tried to, and in fact they suddenly moved them in December after the first storm, using Scott Kennedy and Michael Rotkin of the city council to threaten them with arrest if they didn't leave. Mm-hmm. And they sent them in a famous, I don't know if you've been reading about it in your papers, but they created in essence a group called the River Street Refugees that they paid like $2,000 in park fees to put them up in New Brighton Beach for 2 weeks. This was 40 people. And what these people then began moving from park to park because they had no other shelter other than the Winter Armory shelter, which they didn't want to use because it would involve killing their pets and breaking up couples and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
And now they have this so-called voucher program, which has become a cause célèbre, where Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connival, two kind of homeless activists of the sort, have arranged, have gotten the city council to put money into a program that will allow homeless people to go to the state parks, but it will only accommodate 60 homeless people out of course, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of homeless people there in Santa Cruz.
Well, yeah, and also the state park regulations would require a turnover in who the homeless people are.
Exactly.
Any person is only allowed to use the facility for so long, whether they're paying or not.
That's correct. And indeed, there's been further outcries from the state parks that this will ruin the living environment for the middle-class hot dogs and marshmallow-roasting American families. And there's been a big brouhaha in all the newspapers, from the Chronicle to the San Jose Mercury News, have editorialized against it. But nonetheless, Barbara Riverwoman is proceeding with this program, which I regard as a tempest in a teapot. It's a way for the city council to avoid the real problem, to ship its own homeless program out of town, in essence.
Well, yeah, it sounds to me like city council has decided to re-intensify this anti-homeless position in the hopes of moving everybody off north, maybe to San Francisco, where I understand city government has taken a more benign attitude than it did under the previous mayor.
It's true that Mayor Willie Brown of San Francisco has specifically and publicly stated that he will not arrest people for sleeping, but ironically, in the first 2 months of his administration, arrests for sleeping were up over a year ago. So it seems that the practices of his police department do not match the statements he's making. Nonetheless, he has made those statements, and we've urged Mayor Rotkin here in Santa Cruz to adopt a similar policy, I might say, to no avail.
So the government in San Francisco is doing its standard operating procedure, saying one thing and doing another.
That's it.
Yeah. You know, I haven't really been able to follow anything about Santa Cruz where I am. The last time that Santa Cruz made the national media, it was when that clown was arrested for putting money in the parking lot.
Mr. Twister, yes. Yeah, actually, he's probably the only person in the history of Santa Cruz that produced a change in the law within 2 weeks.
No, they actually did change the law.
Oh, they did, yeah. You can now feed other people's meters.
Well, I guess that if you produce enough stupid laws and you get enough bad publicity over your stupid laws, then the ones that were really stupid and didn't really have any effect on the people of money, that you might just see the government will get rid of that particular one that didn't have any effect on the people of money.
Yeah, exactly so. It made them a laughing stock. In fact, they tried so hard to counter the bad publicity that they all wore clown outfits to the city council meeting where they repealed the law, the city council.
Yeah.
They were going to show what good sports they were, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, they weren't showing what good sports they were. They were showing their true colors.
Good point. Good point. Actually, their true colors will come up again next Tuesday when they have a drum out the drummers law coming. They want to restrict the hours on drumming on the mall. Back, I like to cut it back and restrict the places and so forth.
Oh, so they're going to make it legal to drum like from 1 o'clock and 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. or something like that?
No, make it illegal. I think it's currently illegal to drum after 10. I think they want to make it illegal to drum after 8 in the evening. And they want, it's currently legal to drum before 9. I think they want to make it illegal to drum before 10 in the morning. I'm not quite sure. Rotkin is also wants to, he attempted to close the Ford's parking lot area, you know, the hippie corner, which we now call Friendship Corner up here. And interestingly enough, we were able to successfully fight that one back. The Downtown Commission, the same group that gave us the sit on the sidewalk laws, go to jail,
right,
came up with a close down the Ford's parking lot, even though there was no reason to do it. It would destroy parking spaces downtown. It, you know, it would, in essence, make it a more difficult thing. It actually came out of the police department. The police department's trying to move the hippie scene out. And city council voted that down 5-2, or maybe it was 4-3. But Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews were the people who wanted to close off the parking lot. So now, instead, police are illegally informing people in the parking lot they can't be there. I got those reports yesterday and the day before. So it's business as usual in Santa Cruz.
Right. This is like any other government official. The cops are lying. You know, the Santa Cruz cops typify what we see in government officials throughout this country, where they're trying to claim lies are true. You know, like, I have police officers. They insist to me that it's actually a private property.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's totally ridiculous. Just like with the drumming, you know. They're complaining about people drumming in the evening, but they continue to allow contractors to make loud noises at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, the Metro District is I guess there continue to be complaints about security guards there, although The most recent, one of the complaints that was the most notorious was the hosts downtown have, one host, John Barron, maced a food not, pepper gassed a food not bombs volunteer for having an open container on the mall. Actually, he wasn't doing it punitively. He claimed he was.
And we interrupt this interview with Wonton Dave Jacobs from last night to bring you a live interview with San Francisco activist, Food Now Bombs activist, Keith McHenry. Hi, Keith.
Hi, how's it going down there?
Well, it's not bad. I mean, here we are in the studio. With us is Bert, and how do I pronounce your last name, Bert?
Guyason.
Bert Guyason, who is an activist when I was still in swaddling clothes.
Oh, no.
This guy has been around since time began. And he's a homeless guy frequently too, and so he's a genuine article, whereas I'm sort of a Johnny or a Robert come lately.
A Robert come lately, bathrobe Pierre type, eh?
Exactly. Say hello to him, Bert.
Hello.
Hi, Bert. How's it going?
Not too bad.
Well, we're having fun in San Francisco.
Oh yeah? Are they still blockading you at the front of Golden Gate Park?
They're jacking up homeless people at a really intense rate. I was detained yesterday. Whoop.
Okay, go ahead.
Somebody hit the phone. I was detained yesterday and held for or given a citation for misdemeanor refusing failure to obey a traffic officer for merely attending a protest against the eviction of homeless of public housing tenants. And the Green Shirts, which are right wing anti-homeless group in the Hate, showed up to the homeless people's meeting to organize resistance against police repression in the Hate.
Now, who showed up, Keith?
RAD, residents. Well, they call them resident asshole drug addicts, but it's residents against druggies is what it's supposed to be called.
Oh, okay.
And so they came marching down the street like a little military organization, and it's like people in their 40s and 50s and 60s who are, remember the good old days of when the Hate Ashbury was all Irish American and would like it to return to those
days. I said Irish patriotic group, yeah. I have nothing against the Irish, I'll tell you.
No, being Irish myself, I'm not.
Ah, it's
so
true.
Close to that
good point,
myself.
Yes.
But I'm not a right wing fascist. So, anyway, that was a lot of fun, and there's been a whole bunch of crazy things going on.
So you were almost arrested yesterday?
Well, I was detained and then given a misdemeanor citation for...
Now, what exactly did you do?
Nothing. I went to this protest, which was about 30 people, mostly tenants, housing project activists.
Where was this?
And it was in front of the new city hall, the temporary city hall at 401 Van Ness near McAllister.
What was the nature of the protest?
It was demanding an end to the evictions of people from public housing in San Francisco. As listeners might be aware, the federal government took control of the housing projects in San Francisco, and the housing authority has come under Cisneros, has taken control of the housing projects. And they started Clinton announced a one strike and you're out policy. So if anyone is arrested for a felony that lives in a housing project, their entire family is kicked out.
Incredible.
They don't need to be convicted, they just merely need to be arrested.
Incredible.
And there's a active demolition of the housing projects in the city that is going. The city's trying to, or the federal government is ordering the destruction of unit after unit, and so the tenants are trying to stop their forced eviction, and a small percentage of people are rehoused into Section 8 housing and so on, but a vast majority of the people are just left to live on the streets. And but of course, in the media, they interview the people that did get Section 8 housing and make it appear as though everyone is getting housing, but that's not really happening.
What was the demand of the demonstrators you supported yesterday?
That the eviction stop.
And what was the response of City Hall to those demands?
Well, what we did was there was about 35 people that showed, and they at this one point, right at 1 o'clock at the end of the outdoor rally, the spokesperson announced that everyone would be going into the Board of Supervisors chambers and delivering a letter requesting that the eviction stop until there is some adequate housing provided for those people being evicted. So they entered this is at what's called the War Memorial Building, actually, which is because of the earthquake damage in the original City Hall. So there's a big dark lobby area that you can wait in before you go up the elevators to the fourth floor, or the third floor rather, to the Board of Supervisors office.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got inside, I did not witness this. I was outside. It's very dark in there, so you can't really see inside, even though there's glass doors.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, a line of police with batons stood across the entire front of the bank of elevators, and denied anyone access into City Hall.
Which is, one would think, illegal, since City Hall is the people's building, right?
Correct.
That we've frequently seen police doing this during Food Not Bombs feedings at the other City Hall.
Correct. This is a similar type of situation. When we started the rally, there were no cops there, but this time, apparently they had come in through a back way and were blocking, and some had gone in through the front door. We started seeing some cops show up. So I had been left outside with the Food Not Bombs. In fact, the announcer said, okay, please put your signs behind the Food Not Bombs table. And then I was asked by the people that own the sound system if they could put the sound system behind the table and if I would stay behind and watch it.
Uh-oh.
So I did, and everyone goes inside, and I just assume that there's no big deal. They're just going upstairs. I mean, after all, it's like 25, 30 people, mostly senior citizens, going upstairs. And so I'm sitting there thinking everything is cool, and I'm sort of standing near my truck where my dog is, Pluto, and all of a sudden all these other cops arrive, including Lieutenant Bruce.
Uh-oh.
And so they say, you got to move your truck right now. And so I was the very last parking space before a bus stop.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, well, okay, if I just move, you know, my understanding was that, well, I'm too close to this bus stop, it's just a technicality, but that I could get a $250 ticket if I'm in a bus stop, and that Bruce is the kind of guy that would do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved the truck up, so it was clearly out of the bus stop, into the, you know, and so then I get out of the truck, and he says, let me see your ID.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you got to move. You have to move immediately, or I'm towing your truck.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave him my ID, and I went and I said, okay, let me pack up this stuff over here that I'm watching, and I'll move. So he, that was failure to obey a police officer, that activity, and I packed all this stuff up, essentially ending the outside presence of this demonstration, and I got my misdemeanor, you know, failure to obey a police officer ticket.
You are just a complete troublemaker, man.
Apparently so. So then I went to the mayor. I did move everything. And
did the people ever get past the police line inside?
Eventually
or?
They did get past. Mm-hmm. And they go, they're upstairs, and I move my truck and all this stuff around to the corner to another parking space and then go back with my now two citations that I'd received. Went up to the mayor's office, which it turned out the new mayor...
Mayor Willie Brown...
He had locked himself and his staff into their office and were fearful of the demonstrators.
Yeah, well, perhaps he's feeling a little guilty there.
It was a very interesting thing. So it took about 15, 20 minutes to ultimately to get in. But it is from the time, it was an interesting exchange. But there's obviously nothing is going to happen in support of us and the demonstrators. And.
Brown's going to continue the one felony, and your family is out.
That's going on, and no convictions either. Remember, this is
right,
one
charge.
One, and if you live in a housing project, it's not hard to get a
felony charge
for just
right.
being at the housing. I mean, we have regular roundups of everybody at the housing projects here in San Francisco.
Amazing. What can people do who want to oppose this? Do you have any name of the organization and a phone number, or?
Well, there isn't actually. Well, certainly people should write to Willie Brown and say that they are against this because he's allegedly a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be Willie Brown, Mayor Willie Brown, or San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown, 401 Van Ness,
mm-hmm.
third floor,
mm-hmm.
San Francisco, California,
mm-hmm.
94102.
Mm-hmm.
And to say that you... heard about this. There's also an effort to start organizing protests against this. So we're holding a meeting in San Francisco Monday night to address this issue. And
that's Monday night on April 8th?
April 8th at 777 Valencia at 7:30. And the subject matter, that there's a number of things going on. There is an increase in matrix arrests that is apparently I've understated the 1,000. It's one. I've been reporting what I had heard in the news, which was that there were last year in January and February under Jordan, there was 1,200 arrests for matrix crimes, and in this past month, January and February of this year, it's been 1,700. Apparently, it's actually been more towards 2,500, and I way under-reported the discrepancy between the 2 years arrests.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that's much worse. Now in the Mission, there's like roundups all the time. In the Mission, it can be frightening. You would get the impression you were in Nazi Germany, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And
you want to get rid of that phone call?
Yeah, and it's very, very heavy. Do you want me to take a break? And or should we sign off?
Well, you can take a break and come back. It sounds like you got some other things
yeah,
you want to say.
Yeah, I'll come back. Okay.
Okay.
Great.
So we are on the air to Cats and Jammer Keith McHenry of San Francisco Food Not Bombs, sort of the granddaddy of protest up there, one of the granddaddies. There are plenty of them, actually, but he's gotten lots of publicity around his multiple arrests for serving free food with the organization Food Not Bombs. And actually, if we have time, and I don't know if we're going to have an extra hour today or not here on the show, we will play an interview with Tom Osher, also of Food Not Bombs, recorded earlier today, talking about Tom and Pebbles Trippett, the cannabis activist. And Tom also talks about the situation in San Francisco and a conversation he had regarding My Food Case. And for those of you who haven't been following it, My Food Case involves a...
Hello.
Okay, we'll talk about that. My Food Case involves a 2-month conviction for serving free food, which comes up on May 3rd for... changing in sentencing. But let's get back to you, Keith. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Well, back to actually, as part of the mix of what is going on, see, there's recently we had 130 people arrested attending an anti-police violence protest.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the matrix, increased matrix repression, the arrests of San Francisco Food Not Bombs.
Mm-hmm. sweeps in Golden Gate Park?
Sweeps in all the parks, and Civic Center Plaza, Golden Gate Park, Dolores Park. New police helicopters have been purchased. There's, it's become illegal to sit on the sidewalk in business areas, even though no law was passed to make that possible.
They're drawing their inspiration from Santa Cruz, no doubt.
Yeah, and also there was a, there's been a real brutal crackdown on teenagers in the whole city. Through the curfew thing has been abused, and one woman was strip searched by male, a 15-year-old woman was strip searched by a group of male police officers at Juvie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the city's completely in an uproar over this, and the right wing is hardening its position and becoming very organized, and the progressive community is also organizing intensely, and in fact we have a big protest this afternoon, tonight at 5 o'clock, against the beatings in Riverside and immigrant attacks in general,
mm-hmm.
and 24th and Mission, which should be huge, and so there's been a coalition started of organizations, each from these different communities that have been attacked by the Brown administration and by the police since Brown's been in office, and we're organizing a public forum. We believe that will probably be Friday, the 17th of May,
mm-hmm.
and then a series of protests against the police repression, including possible, at this point, any protest is a civil disobedience, but that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're organizing on those areas. There's also this whole part of that whole reason for having these meetings is because Helen Ann's office, the district attorney here in San Francisco, has been trying to get us to capitulate to some kind of permit process.
Yeah, I heard about that today.
And that's a big hassle. Because
permits for serving free food, which should be unnecessary.
Right. I mean, there's actually, it turns out, Food Not Bombs has considered itself not only providing a direct service, but really a sort of a living theater. And it turns out you don't need a permit for sidewalk performing in San Francisco, which is essentially what we're doing. We're a 6-foot table with literature and a sign and kind of a recreation of the soup line. You know, the first events we did were back in 1980, and they were to represent the soup lines of the Great Depression, to make the issue of poverty in the U.S. Visible,
mm-hmm.
and to make a statement against it, and to gather people together to assemble in protest of this. So we're a First Amendment activity, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the Louise Rene, the one of the wealthiest people in San Francisco, who is also the city attorney, has been dead set against that. And she's part of the mix, and, you know. So while Helen Ann is one player,
Helen Ann is the district attorney.
He's the district attorney, and mm-hmm. he's has an injunction against him as well for sharing free food.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem
when he was a supervisor before he was district attorney. He came out and actually served free food with the rest of us to show solidarity with Food Not Bombs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's very frustrating, and we're concerned that Helen Ann might not see our point of view and put us back into it and try to get us to be in this process where we're getting jerked around by the Recreation and Parks Department, which actually at this point has outlawed permits for free food distribution. And in fact, is one of the crazy things, for instance, is that
yeah, they removed the permit process in July of 1990.
Yeah, July 19th, 1990.
Yeah.
They outlawed issuing permits to anyone to share free food outside to hungry and homeless people, and then they modified it to say that you could, when the Beta Breakers complained, they said you could get a permit to share free food at a entertainment or recreational event.
Mm-hmm.
And so then a funny thing is that every year we get a permit to do soup stock in Golden Gate Park. This year it'll be Saturday the 27th,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be amazing. Bands playing there, the Coup, and people from the, Steve Miller Band, and people like that, and it should be an amazing event anyway, and free food and stuff. But our permit specifically says you can't serve food at this event.
Right.
And every year it says that, even though the law says that the one place you can serve free food is at a free event like this.
Mm-hmm.
So the laws or whatever the government thinks they are at the time they're dealing with you. And so we're concerned about that. So we're proposing to Hal and Ann, through your attorney, that that the city go with the Art Commission street performance guidelines, which is really the most appropriate way for us to deal, which means that you just have to actually clean up after yourselves and don't do anything stupid, like, you know, put your table in front of the door to Macy's so that no one can enter Macy's, you know.
Which might not be so stupid after all.
Might be a good idea, but I mean, you could anticipate a conflict if you did something like that.
Right.
So, so anyway, that's the upshot, is it's a very touchy thing. Also, Whittier Food Not Bombs will be arrested this Sunday in Whittier, California, and two people were cited this...
last Sunday?
Yeah, last Sunday. That is, apparently, when they went to a church parking lot across the street, they didn't get busted. So if the Whittier may choose to move across the street to the church parking lot, but my sense is it's probably worth challenging the state on that, too, because, I mean... That's what they hope to do, is by inches, move us out of sight and out of mind, and so that there will be no visible opposition to the really horrible repression that is going on. So, it's interesting.
And is that it? Is that all you have to tell us?
Right this second, maybe that is.
Well, I mean, I expected a longer report, Keith.
A longer report? Well, let's see what else can I talk about. Well, everyone here is sick of cops, I can tell you that. We've had it with the police.
Well, listen, Keith, we appreciate your report, and hey, keep it up, and I'll talk to you more later about this latest actions by Hallinan, which has me a bit disturbed, too.
Yeah, right, it's really sick. Well, take care.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. It's noon, and we have no next talk show host, so gosh-a-rooney, I'm going to have to fill in here, which gives me a little more time, and hopefully gives us time to get a call from beggar-backer Becky Johnson, who I hope is going to be still listening to our show, and will give us a call to talk about a couple of upcoming events which she's been dealing with. Aha, I hear the telephone.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yes, hi, this is Becky.
Hey, Becky Johnson of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board of Directors.
Yeah, I guess you're really getting a black eye in your show today.
Hey, well, it's I don't think your position is getting a black eye so much as the position of Paul Lee and the small coterie that runs the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Well, and perhaps much of this criticism is warranted.
Well, I don't wish to dictate what you have to say. I think you told me earlier that you have a couple of announcements about upcoming events.
Well, I wanted to alert your viewers, the ones who have television sets, that is, and especially those TCI cable customers, that we'll be airing the City Hall Sleepers protest on Monday at 8 o'clock on Channel 71.
Okay, run that by us one more time. On Channel 71 at 8 o'clock on Monday, is it?
April 8th, Monday, 8 o'clock, 8 p.m., on Channel 71. And that's the City Hall Sleepers Protest.
And how long is that presentation going to be?
It's 22 minutes long. So better be there at the start or you'll miss it, although it will be rebroadcast later. But that will be its first showing.
Wow. Well, it's interesting because even though there have been sort of teeny tiny reports on the mainstream media, there has been no sustained coverage or lengthy coverage of that really important 37-night-long, I guess it'll be tonight, 37 nights sleep out at City Hall for human rights for the homeless in Santa Cruz.
I think that is a not surprising phenomenon that's happening here, that this the media has latched onto Barbara River Woman and Sherry Connable's very small, inconsequential program, coupled with the state parks, in the attempt to find some sort of housing for homeless people under what absolutely restrictive guidelines there are in Santa Cruz County,
mm-hmm.
and that this has gotten so much attention, even to the point that Rush Limbaugh was bashing the program and the River Street refugees by name on his program 2 days ago, when virtually under the noses of Mayor Mike Rodkin and the City Council are these very doggedly determined group of homeless people and activists and just citizens who understand the grievous injustice these laws, these camping ban laws, are inflicting upon the most unfortunate in our
society,
in our society, or our county, I was going to say.
They're messing with poor people.
In a way that, on the face of it, cannot be legal.
Mm-hmm.
How can you make it illegal for a person to fall asleep?
Or to cover up with a blanket.
Or exactly. And then we have these absolutely liberal interpretations by Santa Cruz City Police of what constitutes camping,
mm-hmm.
including taking a piece of corrugated cardboard and setting it down on the ground to sit on. And there have been officers who have called that camping with the intention of spending the night.
And they have confiscated bedding and backpacks and other and political signs, although more recently they're just going after blankets and bedding.
And now with the citizens, with John Malkin resigning from the Citizens Police Review Board, it really shows that we're in a sorry state as far as checking, having our police officers do what we hire them to do, which is to protect and to serve.
Mm-hmm. No question about that. I guess I also wanted to mention that I'm going to be on the air on television 1 day after your show on Tuesday at 6 o'clock on, I guess it's Community Perspectives?
Yes, my former show.
Yeah, you were actually ousted from the show as well as every other talk show host other than, I guess, Charlie Reed, who runs the thing. Many of them have seen their way kind of to the exit. Anyway, I'm going to be on the air for an hour between 6 and 7, and I guess it's a call-in show, so people can call in between 6:15 and 7 o'clock on Tuesday, April 9th. I believe that's when it is.
That's correct.
And that's on Channel 71.
Mm-hmm.
And the call-in number there is 425-4920, in case you want to call in on Tuesday, April 9th from 6:15 to 7. And I'm going to be talking about, I'll be talking about homeless issues, and I'm also going to be, I think I'm going to bring up your issue, too, because I think your issue is linked to the homeless. Charlie Reed made certain statements regarding the fact that he wanted no further homeless coverage, or there had been too much homeless coverage, when in fact you'd actually had a pittance of homeless coverage on Channel 71, right?
Well, he went in the control room and angrily yelled at people, "No more homeless issues for 3 months!"
My goodness, and when was his outburst?
Well, that was right after my last show.
Which was?
That was January 2nd.
So January, February, March, April, so it's been 3 months. So
I guess it's...
Charlie keeps his word, I guess.
What a guy.
I guess you've been pretty active in issuing press releases, Becky, around the City Hall sleepout. In fact, there were 3 more tickets last night. I just got the word from Dragonsard Dan Hopkins, and more seizures of blankets and bedding. And I'm going to be reporting on that. Is that you or is that me?
I'm beeping.
Sounds like it's yours.
I'm beeping. Yes.
Well, I'm gonna let you go then, and wish you well, and get back to us if you got more you want to say.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Becky Johnson.
Well, that was Becky, and we're back at Free Radio Santa Cruz with a little extra time here. And with that extra time, you can always call in, of course, to register your thoughts on all this at 427-3772. We're going to continue an interview with activist Wonton Dave Jacobs that was interrupted about half an hour ago when we got our call from Keith McHenry of San Francisco. Wonton Dave broadcasting from an undesignated location, unrevealed, and he's on the lam at the moment. He is very, very active, very high profile, a very outspoken man, also very knowledgeable about the law, who carried many legal cases to complete victory in terms of challenging misapplication of laws and essentially designed to harass him for his homeless status. He actually had a couple laws overturned, or at least, let's say, police interpretations of a couple laws, and you'll hear about that as we continue this interview recorded earlier last night with Dave Jacobs.
Threatened by the guy when the guy stood up and, you know, gesticulated at him, but the very idea that hosts are carrying pepper gas and using it to enforce laws that are anti-homeless laws is a frightening one to me.
Well, it's a pretty frightening society we live in, you know. And these hosts are actually government agents. They're paid for entirely. The cops is beating the guy with the baton, and then earlier tonight on Larry King Live, I heard the police officer's attorney say that this was necessary violence, that police officers are trained to do to protect themselves, because the guy didn't immediately get down on the ground. But you can see by watching the videotape, the guy was never given an opportunity to get down on the ground. In fact, the baton beating was preventing him from moving to a position where he could get down on the ground.
So Rodney King redux, eh?
Well, typical government violence against people that do not have political power.
Now, you suffered violence by the police force here in Santa Cruz when you were engaging in peaceful protest at the town clock after the Bush's Iraqi war, right?
Well, actually, I was not subjected to physical violence myself at the town clock. Well, except for, I was on one occasion, that's right, I forgot. I don't always, you know, that was a three-month-long event, and I did forget that towards the beginning of it, there was a time when I was body slammed to the ground by a couple of police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking more of the more radical piece of violence I was subjected to by the Santa Cruz police a year later when I was attempting to litigate the tickets that they were giving me.
Tell me about that.
Well, that was happened when I was sitting on the sidewalk on Union Street.
Was that when I was sitting next to you?
Well, no, they didn't really get violent with me that time. It was before you sat with me that they became violent with me. In fact, the reason why you sat with me is because of the time where they were violent. And, you know, they had already harassed me a couple of times over sitting on the sidewalk in that area. And the third time, instead of harassing me, they had half a dozen police officers manhandling me around, even though I was basically first sitting without moving and then laying prone without moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I was being manhandled and beaten by the police officers. And then a few days later, when we were both sitting on the sidewalk together, they arrested me and left for sitting on the sidewalk and left you who was sitting right next to me, sitting on the ground and refused to arrest you. Quiet.
I remember that, yeah. And that was, of course, the same case eventually when Judge Kelly, who, by the way, recently won re-election against Commissioner Watts in a race that just ended 2 weeks ago, Kelly took the court out onto the sidewalk to make a judgment as to whether you were, in fact, blocking the sidewalk and speedily found that you were not.
That's right. And then at the conclusion of the trial, well, when he took us out to the sidewalk, he had the police pose me in the position that they were claiming that I was in. And even though the police officer that had me arrested fudged and moved me out a little bit more from the picket fence that's right there, you know, sitting up against the picket fence.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved me out away from it to a little bit to make it look more like I was blocking the sidewalk, but the sidewalk itself was so wide that there was no way that I could have been blocking it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he used that picture, gave that picture to the DA at the end of the trial, and told the DA to tell the police this is not a crime. And that did stop him from arresting me for sitting on the sidewalk for a while. But then we all know that eventually the city council tried to make it a crime to sit on the sidewalk, and to this day, for instance, the crime to sit on the sidewalk at certain times or in most parts of the downtown sidewalk.
That's correct, although people are frequently ignoring that, although the hosts are doing their best to essentially intimidate people into following the send 10 feet from a shop on the sidewalk, go to jail law. So you also, I believe, one of the reasons that the city council sleep out now in its 36th day has not come downtown onto the mall much, although we've done a few demonstrations kind of in support of that, is because of the put an object on the sidewalk after dark, go to jail law, which you yourself were arrested under on July 5th, 1994.
Yeah.
along with the Red Top Robert Flory at Cathcart and Pacific, where you set up a 4th of July freedom demonstration.
Yeah. They have a lot of easy to selectively enforce laws in Santa Cruz. Like to put something down on the sidewalk after dark, you're guilty of a crime law.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically, according to law, if you put anything on the sidewalk, anywhere on the sidewalk, where someone might want to walk by or through that particular spot where you put something on the sidewalk, then you have committed a crime. And, you know, people constantly put stuff on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And the only people they get arrested for putting stuff on the sidewalk basically are people that are doing political activity that the government doesn't like. That's what the law is written for. In fact, the law is written specifically to prevent people from doing unfavored political activity.
Well, you may remember the case of BD, David Dumars, who was pepper gassed by Sergeant Alufi.
Yeah.
When he protested the police misconduct against your Valentine's Day vigil in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
He recently returned to court about a week ago to the courtroom of Judge Barracuda Barton, as I call him. And Judge Barton sentenced, I guess there was a... The sentences had all been kicked around back and forth, and he declared he was sentencing him to, I guess, 45 days in jail for writing on the Sentinel news box, "The New World Order has a Third Reich odor."
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And he wouldn't hear of anything as far as... he wouldn't hear any appeal from that sentence at the moment, but when he wouldn't allow him to do community service on that. But when he reached the jail, when David Dumars reached the jail, he was told by the jail authorities that it was fine for him to do work release, and he was fine for him to do community service, and he got 26 days of community service in spite of Judge Barton's demand on that. Barton also has been the judge who has been issuing the orders that the sleepers at City Hall are to be arrested, particularly specific sleepers. They apparently now have a list that they're pulling people from and arresting them on charges like sleeping, either misdemeanor charges that disappear or infraction charges that aren't even misdemeanor charges, taking them to jail.
Yeah.
And again, it seems to be at the instigation of Judge Barton, who is then insisting these people be held on bail over the weekend and so forth.
Well, unfortunately, you know, judges do not always concern themselves with what is legal or what is proper, and oftentimes concern themselves with what supports the system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason why we have so much violence, unnecessarily violence on the part of police officers, because judges let them do it. That's why we have police officers perjure themselves in court, because judges commend them for perjuring themselves in court. I personally... you know, we were talking earlier about the trial that I had with Judge Kelly for sitting on the sidewalk. Actually, I was saying sitting, but I was actually reclined,
mm-hmm.
parallel, and in contact to the picket fence that bordered the sidewalk.
Across from the Java House. Yeah,
on Union Street.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a number of police officers involved, three of which testified, the arresting officer and another officer and Sergeant Alufi. And the arresting officer and the second officer, they both testified that it was reclined parallel to the fence. And Sergeant Alufi testified that I was reclined perpendicular to the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was perpendicular to the fence, then the sidewalk's about 7 foot wide, and I'm about 6 foot long, so I would have been eating up all but a foot or two of the sidewalk if I had been perpendicular to the fence, and thus I would have either in the sense of the people walking over me or going around me, you know, and that would have been blocking the sidewalk and unlawful under state law, and not to mention extremely discourteous. And, you know, at the end of the trial, after Judge Kelly acquitted me on the basis of the position that I was put on, put into by the arresting officer, and he told the district attorney to tell the police this is not a crime, he then proceeded on to commend Sergeant Alufi and say that what a good police officer he was. Even though he sat there and listened to two police officers say that I was parallel to the fence, and then later saw the police officers pose me parallel to the fence. And he sat there and listened to Alufi testify that I was perpendicular to the fence.
In other words,
he knew that Alufi, he knew that either those two police officers lied or Alufi lied. And he commended Sergeant Alufi. You know, he took the word of the two police officers who said I was parallel, thus he didn't even believe Sergeant Alufi. And he commended Sergeant Alufi for being such a great cop.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The
So this is going to show that the judges helped to perpetuate the criminality and the illegal actions of government actors, including police officers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say that that's also the case with groups like the Citizens Police Review Board, which found that Sergeant Hennig had brushed the breasts of a prostitute in order to test her as far as some sort of solicitation of prostitution. And it found that the prostitute was credible, it believed that that had happened, and yet it did not sustain a complaint against Sergeant Hennig, indicating that it felt that Hennig was, even though it found the witnesses credible, and it found that that thing with Hennig had occurred, he brushed the breasts of this prostitute as a sort of a way of finding out whether she, you know, would engage in an act of for sex. Nonetheless, so they seem to want to say, well, yeah, this isn't good, but we're not going to really take it too far. Similarly with Judge Kelly, in your case, yeah, we'll find you not guilty and we'll say that it's not a crime, but what a wonderful police officer Sergeant Alufi is. And in fact, getting back to the Police Review Board, yesterday, John Malkin resigned from the Police Review Board because, in essence, he had apparently found that they were engaging in witch hunts against him. The police department was they were having special procedures on the Police Review Board that was catering to the police department instead of the citizenry. I guess I'm mentioning these things both to inform you and to kind of bring things up to date as to what's going on here in Santa Cruz.
I'm glad to hear that John did resign. Yeah. I know John personally, and I think he's a nice guy. And I know that he wants to do a good job for the community, but he has had a real difficult time coming to accept the fact that the system is rigged against people. And the less resources you have, the less clout you have in the society, the worse your job is, the less money you have, the more the system is rigged against you. And I'm sure it hurt John a lot to go through that experience, but in the long run, hopefully, he can learn the valuable lessons out of it.
And then I want to let you know that legal worker and sometime attorney Ray Grunick is returning to Santa Cruz and may well be a part of, will be a part of the scene here again, but has said he may assist in a renewed challenge to the sleeping ban in spite of the battering we took with the overturning of the Tobe decision.
Right. Well, hopefully he'll be able to help, but the key thing for Ray to help outside of just being a protester, of course, is if an attorney takes it on. And I take it that the liberal bleeding heart attorneys of Santa Cruz have once again found it insignificant to try and protect the homeless people's constitutional rights against malicious arrests and things like that that's been ordered by the police and by Judge Martin.
Well, there is Margaret Marr and other ACLU attorneys have agreed to take on the cases of certain people and not to take on the cases of certain other people, and I think you know who I'm talking about. Namely, not my case or those associated with me. It's not been, actually, that's not clear this time around whether they're going to do the same thing they did 2 years ago when they refused to take on Linda Edwards' case and they refused to have me called as a witness in certain cases because of the personal animosities of Margaret Marr for me.
Well, let's face it, a lot of people have a personal animosity against you.
I only know of a couple of attorneys who would actually go so far as to try to exclude me as a witness from their cases. But in this situation, Marr has agreed to look into certain matters, although that there's been no attempt to get an injunction, for example, to stop the police from arresting on misdemeanor charges that are never filed, or arresting on infraction charges improperly and then holding people in jail, or arresting some people on infraction charges and ignoring others and selectively doing this within the very context of one evening and a number of sleepers that are sleeping out. This has happened repeatedly, or seizing people's blankets or stealing and destroying protest signs.
Yeah. You know, for a long time, and to this day, it continues to really get to me on an emotional level, the way the bleeding heart liberal attorneys in Santa Cruz refuse to really do anything significant in fighting for constitutional rights of people of Santa Cruz. But in another way, too, you know, sometimes I think that maybe these people, you know, I'm not trying to justify this behavior on their part, but I'm saying maybe they're just frustrated themselves because they see it happening not only in Santa Cruz, but everywhere in this country. And it's like nobody pays attention. Nobody gives a damn about it. The system is totally rigged and blocked. You go to court over it, you litigate for years and years, you go up and down the appellate ladder, and you get nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the court comes off with bogus opinions, and then they're so bogus they won't even put them in the record books to make them official, other than for you, so that when you go to court, you've already lost because you litigated it. But the opinion was so bogus, they won't even put it. They don't even want to admit they've done this to you by putting it in the record.
Yeah, it's called depublishing it.
Well, they don't even bother to depublish it. They don't even put it up for publication in the first place.
Right.
You know, they just refuse. They don't put it in the record book and then say, oh, we're going to take this out of the record book. They just refuse to put these bogus decisions into the record book so that they can point to the nice decisions in the record books and say, oh, look at how great of a justice system we have. But when you actually need the justice system, then you rely on those nice decisions. You get bogus decisions that they won't even put in the record book, but the bogus decision applies to you for the rest of your life in that county or state, depending upon which level you're tried at.
Wow. Well, we've run the gamut here, and we could continue, but I think I'm going to kind of...
She usually responds to her calls about the agenda on Tuesday, but there's rumors that Drum Out the Drummers is going to be coming up on the agenda at the city council meeting on Tuesday, either in the afternoon at 3:30 or at 7 o'clock at their nighttime meeting.
Yeah.
Now, you're a musician on the Mall.
That's what they say.
And you, in fact, were the subject of a rather obnoxiously favorable cover story in the Metro.
Not a cover story.
Well, you had a big picture. Was it Phil Free? Anyway, you got more media than I've ever gotten in this.
I know. That's the way it should be.
Santa Cruz Metro. I mean, you know, who do you think you are, anyway?
Just because they don't like you, Robert. Well, they made you the most irritating personality of the year. I thought that
hey,
was
I crazy. Don't run around singing about the hospitality Nazis, man.
Well, neither do I. Phil does.
I see. So Phil, in fact, is the loose cannon on board, eh?
No, I think it kind of varies between us. You know, I usually do the night shift, and Phil does a day shift, and, you know, we keep resistance on the Mall all the time, and I think that's the big problem. And now that there's the new corporate owns Starbucks is in town, I think I might be singing across from there.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing how they weather the storm and what they do.
They're at the old beer garden right across from the coffee roasting
company. Yeah, right across from the coffee roasting